Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
The New Statesman.
Hello, I'm Rachel.
I'm Rachel.
I'm Anoush.
And I'm Ben.
And on today's by-election special episode of the New Statesman podcast, we are delving deep into the results in Selby and Ainsty, Uxbridge and South Ruislip, and Somerton and Frome. I'm Rachel Cunliffe. I'm sitting in as host today since Anoush has been reporting from Somerton and Frome, so I get to turn the tables and ask her the questions. Also joining us are the New Statesman's deputy political editor, Rachel Wearmouth, and our resident polling expert, Ben Walker. This has turned out to be a really exciting set of by-election results. I think there's something in it for everyone. Labour succeeded in overturning a massive Conservative majority of over 20,000 in Selby, the second biggest Tory to Labour swing in by-election history, but it failed to win the London constituency of Uxbridge, recently vacated by a certain Mr. Boris Johnson, falling short by just 495 votes. Meanwhile, the Lib Dems were victorious in the West Country seat of Somerton and Frome, where the Tories had a majority of over 19,000, winning by 11,000 votes, which is a swing of 29%. What happened? How is it going to affect how the parties are feeling right now? And what does it mean for a general election? Ben, you have been up all night following this for Britain Elects and the New Statesman. What are your first thoughts?
It's delighted to be here.
Welcome, Ben.
3 hours of sleep.
Look, Somerton and Frome, Selby and Ainsty, they're sea change results. They're big shifts. They are pretty much what the poll said. Although, to be honest, actually, the Conservatives did worse than what the poll said in Selby and Ainsty and Somerton and Frome. Labour outperformed what we were forecasting. The Lib Dem swing in Somerton is similar to what they got in Tiverton and Honiton last year. So it's really good stuff. They're showing a comeback in the West Country that we were only seeing in the 1990s. It suggests they're not just recovering. They don't just have potency in Remainer-leaning, graduate-heavy parts of England. They're coming back where they were once strong as well. So there's a bit of a big success for the Lib Dems there. Greens are starting to pick up a lot of apathetic Tories, a lot of disaffected Tories there, which bodes well for their future targets in Suffolk and such. They're not just a threat to Labour. They're something a bit more multidimensional. In Selby and Ainsty, no, this was the biggest numerical majority overturned by Labour in the party's history ever. Okay, that's a big number. It was the second biggest swing, the biggest being Dudley West in 1994. It's really impressive stuff. And by the way, Selby and Ainsty it's a big shift. It's a big swing because, look, you hear this accent. I'm from Harrogate, which is a neighbouring seat. That's where I was born and bred. This is where this posh accent was forged, right? And I spent I was baptised in the villages in the seat. My dad played cricket in the seat and all the rest of it. And if you're a Labour Party winning in seats where people sound like me in the north of England, that's a big shift. Okay, you shouldn't be winning in North Yorkshire by as much as you are. That is, of course, to reiterate, it's more Tory failure than Labour success, but there is a Labour success happening here. It's quite significant. There are very few wards in Selby and Ainsty where there are Labour councillors or indeed any Labour activists. They've come from nothing here. They aren't just winning in the two major towns, Selby and Tadcaster. They're branching out into villages, which is a real advance on their vote. And I just say this about the three by-elections. We will, of course, talk about Uxbridge rightly.
But there are more Selbys and Somertons than there are Uxbridges in this country. What tells you about the national narrative? Selby and Somerton. Uxbridge, you know, I don't want to say it's a flashing plan. I don't want to say it's something to completely ignore, but there are two races telling you about the national numbers, about the national feeling. Uxbridge is not one of them.
We'll talk about Uxbridge a little bit later, but Anoush, you went to Somerton earlier this week. You hung out with the Lib Dem candidate there and with Ed Davey. The Tory candidate, I believe, ran away from you. But you spoke to people there on the ground about the Tories, the Lib Dems, their feelings in the constituency. Is this the kind of result you were expecting?
Yes, it definitely was. I should say she didn't run away. She was sort of escorted briskly away after I tried to speak to her three or four times. But yes, it really was what I expected to see, because the Lib Dems, by the time that I got to them to interview them, which was a couple of days before the by-election day, they weren't even trying to pretend to do that thing where they were like, oh, it's very close, it's in the balance. They were just so confident. And everyone I spoke to, from lifelong Conservative voters to people who would usually like to vote Labour, were saying that they were going to give their vote to the Lib Dems. Some of them were saying it's to give the Tories a bloody nose or to sort of shock them because they're so annoyed about the state that the country was in. Some were saying, you know, I don't really know what the Lib Dems' national policies are, but, you know, it's a tactical thing to try and block the Tory candidate. So it wasn't all just a positive enthusiasm for the Lib Dems. It was perhaps more of a tactical decision. And we've seen that in previous by-elections as well, that the Lib Dems have completely stormed to victory in recently, since 2021. But I would say that because this is one of their old areas, so they won Somerton and Frome off the Tories in 97, you can see that this is perhaps another sign of a resurgence for the party in their old stomping ground of the West Country. And if they do come back big here, this is what Ed Davey told me, that he said they can do some real damage to the Tories. So on top of those blue wall home counties, posher seats where they have less of a heritage, if they win these West Country places back, then that's going to, yeah, do real damage to the Tory chances.
You mentioned tactical voting there, and we've talked before about how that's really difficult to measure in the polls or to map the polls onto possible general election results, because it can't show people who would support Labour but would go for the Lib Dems if they've got more of a chance. There was a lovely visual gag that the Lib Dems were trying to do that you experienced, if you want to remind listeners of that.
So when I said I was going down to Somerset, the Lib Dem press officer who I rang, he said, we're going to a horse sanctuary. And the idea is we're going there just so that Ed Davey can say it's a two-horse race. And it's really cheesy. And the whole thing was like extremely degrading, because they only had one horse in the picture at first, because the people at the horse sanctuary hadn't actually been briefed that they needed two. So they had to drag another poor abandoned pony who was trying to seek sanctuary at this place into the picture. They're all very jolly. And it was an important message, which is if you were tempted to vote Labour, and actually 8,000 odd people did vote Labour in this seat at the general election, last general election, don't vote for Lib Dem, because there's only two games in town, the Tories or the Lib Dems. And if you vote Labour, you might stop the Lib Dem from blocking the Tory. So that was the kind of message. That's why they were trying to say it was a two-horse race. What was interesting was actually the Greens came third in this seat, which meant that Labour fell out of third place. I think they actually came fifth in the end, losing their deposit. So perhaps that message about not voting Labour this time round got through very strongly. But I do think that it was the temptation among some people to vote Green that I picked up on when I was doing vox popping. I think their brand, as I've written before, in rural parts of England, really appeals to people who are wanting to see better custodianship of the environment. And the brand speaks strongly to that.
This is an indication of one, tactical voting is very, very potent. We should never forget this about the 1997 election, which is that in about, I think, two dozen seats, tactical voting helped bring the Progressive Party over the line. It helped the Lib Dems more than it helped Labour, but still, you're talking, 20 to 30 seats, which could have been Conservative, were not, as a consequence of tactical voting. We're seeing that on a really militaristic Prussian scale in these by-elections that, of course, the Lib Dems run. And also where Labour runs as well, Lib Dems don't put in the resources. Their vote doesn't get teed up to turn out. And when you don't do that, you go elsewhere. This is the thing when we talk about Labour in places like Mid-Bedfordshire and elsewhere. Traditionally, their vote never gets teed up. It never gets talked to. It never gets rallied by a Labour campaign. So when the by-election comes, a lot of those Labour voters, traditional Labour voters, think, what's the point? So they'll go for the other pony in the race, the other horse in the race, and that often is the Lib Dems. Mid Bedfordshire, though, this is the curious thing. Labour's are putting in resources, Labour's putting in manpower. And what that means is the Labour vote in Mid Bedfordshire, according to that one poll, by opinion, is staying up. It's holding firm, which is both, one, hurting the Lib Dems and allowing other parties and candidates to pick up support as well. So I don't know if you saw, remember the Mid-Bedfordshire poll? I know we're detracting a little bit. Boy, it had Labour ahead. It had an independent getting around 19%. It had the Lib Dems doing rather poorly. In seats like Somerton and Frome, Tiverton, North Shropshire, much of home counties England, Labour doesn't have history there, is probably going to leave them alone. And the Lib Dems are allowed to clean up shop and probably will clean up shop at the next election. But I think there are an increasing number of countryside seats where Labour are getting bullish. Selby and Ainsley should vindicate that. And consequently, they may get into a bit of a scrap with the Lib Dems. On the night, on social media, so many Lib Dem activists just saying, well, Uxbridge shows, you know, the Lib Dems should run the thing in Mid-Bedfordshire and Labour should step aside and all the rest of it. And I don't know if that says much at all. I really think Mid-Bedfordshire is yet to be decided. And I don't think it will be decided on who goes for it, Labour or Lib Dems. But that could allow the Tories to come through the middle.
Mid-Bedfordshire, we should say, is Nadine Dorries' constituency. And she announced she was resigning, but hasn't actually, as of this moment, resigned yet. So that's a by-election that is coming, but we're not quite sure when it's going to be. And it all depends on when she decides to actually resign, which she's not going to do until she works out why it is that she wasn't given a peerage. After the break, we'll dive into the big one, Boris Johnson's old seat of Uxbridge and South Ruislip. Subscribers can listen to our podcasts ad-free on the New Statesman app. It's available to download on iOS or Android. If you're not a subscriber already, what are you waiting for? Get access to all of our reporting and analysis from just £1 a week at the website newstatesman.com/podcast offer. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
If you enjoy the New Statesman podcast, then you'll love our daily politics newsletter, Morning Call. It's a quick, essential guide to the big political story each morning by me, Freddie Hayward and Rachel Wearmouth, featuring original reporting from Westminster and beyond, our analysis of the latest political news, and some recommendations of the best reads of the day. Sign up for free at the link in the podcast description.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Let's talk about Uxbridge, because this is a bit of an upset for Labour. This was the kind of London seat that was meant to be easiest for them to win. But there were signs that it wouldn't be quite as straightforward as the figures suggested. Rachel, you wrote for the New Statesman on the 5th of July, very presciently, that the Labour campaign there might be in trouble. What do you think happened?
It's been a vote against Sadiq Khan's expansion of the ultra-low emission zone, essentially. The Conservative candidate, Steve Tuckwell, made his campaign entirely about that. He turned it into a referendum on ULEZ. This is a charge that kind of will see the drivers of the most polluting cars pay sort of £12.50 a day if they want to drive their car. During a cost of living crisis, it's turned out to be quite a toxic issue. And even though Danny Beals, the Labour candidate, had some leeway to go out and oppose it and say, I want the Labour London mayor to delay this policy while there's such a squeeze on household budgets, it's really just caught up with the Labour campaign and they haven't broken through in the way that they hoped they might, even though the sort of London narrative for some time has been that Labour's on the march. When you looked at last year's local elections, for example, it were taking Wandsworth, Barnet, Westminster. So there was reason for people to think there's a huge amount of momentum for Labour in London, but obviously outer London is a very, very different terrain. And that's what Labour's kind of discovered here. And I just think there's an awful lot of anger at Sadiq within the Labour campaign at the moment. But they lost out by just 495 votes, and there was an almost 7% swing. They have some reasons to be positive there when it comes to the next election, but I think there's an awful lot of frustration. But it's worth saying that Uxbridge didn't even turn to Labour in 1997 during a by-election shortly after Tony Blair's landslide. It's always been a bit of a complicated seat, but I think where Labour have really gone wrong here is just a complete failure to manage expectations and to acknowledge very early on that it actually was not a done deal for them.
Yeah, I would definitely echo that the politics of these kind of outer London seats, particularly in outer West London. I grew up in Ealing, which is a sort of neighbouring borough to Hillingdon, which encompasses some of this seat. Where do you think this accent comes from, Ben? You're talking about yours. The politics there are complicated. Remember that Labour actually lost Harrow, the borough of Harrow, to the Tories last year, even in the context of Labour storming ahead in other London boroughs. So there are other things going on underneath the surface. There's a big British Indian population in these places, and that's something that has occasionally been exploited on the Tory side. You can see in Harrow East constituency, Bob Blackman's constituency, he uses sort of Hindu Gujarati community to try and forward arguments against Sadiq Khan, for example. So there's a lot of different politics going on in these seats, which could potentially back up Ben's description as a potential sort of flash in the pan rather than something that can necessarily be used as a symbol for elsewhere in London or elsewhere in the country. But it is something that I agree with you, Rachel W, that Labour should really have been aware of. And I think it was interesting at the New Statesman summer reception. I think Rachel Reeves got up and said she was looking forward to, you know, a Friday morning with three fewer Tory MPs in Parliament. I think this kind of triumphalist narrative ahead of the by-elections was a mistake, because it has meant that Rishi Sunak can go there this morning and say, look, everything's still to play for.
Yeah, among the wiser heads in the Lib Party, I think there's some concern about the outer city areas in places like Manchester as well, who might feel slightly disconnected from some of the sort of central metropolitan areas. That's something that they've been thinking about for a while. There's also within London Labour a potential ongoing row, because it's only 10 months out from Sadiq Khan's re-election campaign. And within central London, there's a bit of frustration with Sadiq in that they feel like the lion's share of the pressure will fall on them to try and rescue his re-election campaign. And then you have the dynamics in all of the outer London boroughs. I think it's significant that as soon as Danny Beale's got a bit of leeway to speak out on ULEZ, that Siobhan McDonough, the Mitch Mordom MP, came straight out of the blocks and saying that she was very much against it also. So I think there's a bit of nervousness around outer London. I'm not sure how much you would read into it about the wider campaigns, really. But I think if you're a Conservative, you might look at a campaign like that where the Conservative brand was kept entirely off all of the leaflets. Rishi Sunak was kept away from the campaign in the same way that Sadiq Khan actually was kept away from the Labour campaign. But I think where there are single issues, where there are wedge issues, and there's very strong local feeling about certain policies, you wonder if there might be a similar approach from the Conservative Party.
If we're thinking about a general election campaign, we're looking at ways that the Conservatives, who are pretty desperate at the moment, might find things to cling on to. Turning net zero, turning green policies into culture war, single issue fronts that they can really rally behind. Is the lesson from Uxbridge that is potentially a way forward and potentially successful? I mean, I think it's worth remembering that the Greens in Uxbridge got over 800 votes. So if some of the Greens had voted Labour instead, it could have been a very narrow victory for Labour. But is there a danger that the next election gets fault on the culture war issues of Labour wants to take away your cars and your gas boilers, and they don't understand that it's a cost of living crisis and net zero isn't compatible with the current economic climate, and that becomes a real Tory fighting point?
I've just had a message from a very angry Labour advisor who was saying that while it's good enough not to be the Tories in some places like Selby, it's not enough when the fight is on a individual issue like this ULEZ issue in Uxbridge, because this source was saying that Labour doesn't have anything positive to offer in response. So I suppose the fight could get tricky in areas where a single issue is quite a motivating factor and Labour doesn't have anything to fill the void. I think Keir Starmer sort of washed his hands of the ULEZ issue, saying that it was a matter for London or for this seat rather than a matter for national policy. And I think that's left a bit of a vacuum.
Yeah. And I think it raises questions about how you deal with devolved local authorities in an election campaign as well, because obviously this City Hall in London's Labour run, And similarly with Greater Manchester, and where policies that kind of run against some of the messages of the national campaign, that's good and fertile ground for the Conservatives to make hay. If there's a bit of division between the local Labour group and the central Labour campaign. When it comes to climate change issues, I think the UK has kind of escaped them becoming really nasty. In Australia, they were referred to as the climate wars, and it got really quite nasty and quite vicious. And I wonder if some of that is actually in the post for our general election campaign.
Very, very quickly, because we spent too much of the last, I don't know, 5 years talking about him. But obviously the Uxbridge by-election was called because Boris Johnson chose to resign in quite spectacular fashion, rather than to allow MPs to vote on his suspension, which could have triggered a recall petition and a by-election in his constituency. Now, he clearly calculated that he'd probably lose that and he wanted to leave on his own terms rather than face the humiliation of being rejected by his constituents. But does this result suggest that he should have had the nerve to fight it out?
Potentially, yeah. I think it's instructive that the Labour Party did not make Boris Johnson as an individual politician an issue in the campaign. They kept him away from it, didn't put Boris Johnson in his mountain of sleaze on all of their leaflets.
I love that mountain of sleaze. You know,
they didn't use any of that because their judgment was that there were a lot of people locally who actually feel that he was done over by the system. So that would tell you that if Boris Johnson, who was always been a very successful campaigner, had stood, then yeah, I think he stood a very good chance of holding it. But I think that tells you something about him, that he wasn't prepared to take that risk and would prefer to flounce off at the time. Yeah, but the result would have suggested that he definitely could have held it.
Yeah, that's another part of the complicated politics of these places. I think people, you know, remember voting for Boris Johnson as London mayor, for example, and they might feel fondly about that period of the sort of Johnson era, even if they were a little disappointed about how he managed the country as prime minister. So there is a sort of residual fondness I sometimes find in these kind of seats.
Yeah, although on the other hand, that, you know, with ULEZ as the central issue of the campaign, Boris Johnson, who when he was London mayor first introduced the ultra low emission zone, it's actually quite hard to judge, isn't it? But given how good he is at campaigning, he probably could have held on to it in these circumstances.
We should remember, for all that there's going to be a lot of Labour hand-wringing, this is still a terrible result for the Conservatives. Quite an interesting result for Rishi Sunak, though. Going into this week, if he'd lost all three of them, he would have been the first Prime Minister since 1968 to lose three by-elections on the same day. Obviously, they clung on in Uxbridge, but we've already talked about the kind of seismic majorities that were overturned in Selby and Somerton. How despairing should the Tories be at the moment? And also, what does this do for Rishi Sunak? So we had John Oxley writing for The New Statesman this week on the fact that he wrote, ironically, the worse the showing, the more secure Rishi Sunak could be. His argument being that if he lost all three of them, no Conservative would want to challenge him for the leadership. They just think there's no hope. Let's wait a bit. But if they manage to win one, maybe there's a chance for a challenger. Ben, do you think there's any hope for the Tories in these results? Anything hopeful?
Nope. It's really not great. Perhaps it's my own partisan prejudices talking. I don't know. No, it's not. Look at the national numbers. The national polls are the worst they've been for a good while now. And I'll just a nice little historical comparison for you here. 1976. It was becoming pretty obvious that the Labour government under Harold Wilson, then James Callaghan, wasn't going to do particularly well. Margaret Thatcher, by the way, started quite poorly as leader of the Conservative Party. She didn't come in with great panache. She started quite poorly. There were two by-elections in 76. Grimsby, it was a seat the Conservatives really went hard to take, and they almost took it because it was a marginal and they failed. In Ashfield, it was a safe Labour seat that the Conservatives swept away. And it really illustrated the national dissatisfaction with the then Labour government, and bode well for the Tories a few years down the line. And it seems to be, we've just had something quite similar here, because if anyone goes to Grimsby, it's got a local identity, quite a bit of an industry with fishing, and perhaps local issues kept Grimsby for Labour then. I don't remember, funnily enough. So there's that. And it feels like we're having something similar here. Anything for the government, there really isn't. Look, you are 20-something points behind in the polls. You are behind on the economy, something you have never been behind on since 2007 when Labour was winning elections. Your leader, Rishi Sunak, is trailing Keir Starmer. It's hard to sometimes say because we like to call, you know, Keir Starmer a wet wipe, rightly, in the eyes of some members of the public. But still, you are trailing the Labour Party. You're trailing the Labour leader on three fundamental metrics that say to voters, how are you going to vote at the next election? Because voting intentions come and go. The polls come and go. You saw big Labour leads with Neil Kinnock. You saw big Labour leads with Ed Miliband for some reason. But you never saw Labour leads with either of those two leaders on the economy or leadership likability or a perception of competence. We don't, the fundamentals haven't really changed here. Labour shouldn't be winning Selby and Ainsty. They shouldn't be doing as well as they have. Okay, that's not a protest vote. That's something quite bigger. And I should say, we are due boundary changes. The next election will be fought on new seats. The Selby and Ainsty seat was quite hard stuff for Labour, really, because there's a lot of those Anglo-Saxon villages. They're nice to live in, but not Labour voting. Not Labour voting at all. So for Labour to win there is quite something. But the boundary changes in Selby, they make it a lot better for Labour because it stops becoming this broccoli tree and fattens out to include bits of Leeds. And that's just going to be a lot better for Labour. And I dare say Keir Mather will perhaps be an MP in the next parliament, whereas Johnny Mercer, who insulted him last night, won't.
Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to submit a question for us to discuss on a future podcast, you can do so at newstatesman.com/youaskus. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Rachel Cunliffe, and my colleagues, Anoush Shakelian, Rachel Wearmouth, and Ben Walker. Come back tomorrow for our weekend audio long read, Quinn Slobodian's fascinating reportage feature, How Saudi Arabia is Buying the World. We're produced by Chris Stone.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.